Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's been a disastrous divorce and the worst, not yet over. We're talking, of course, about Brexit. Great Britain voted to leave the European Union in 2016, and the three-year search for a deal has been unsuccessful. Economic growth in Britain has flatlined, and now some certainty. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson says it's goodbye by October 31st, no matter what. Augustana University professors Bill Swart and Jason Harris took students to watch history unfold earlier in the year as part of the class Brexit, the Great Divorce, and Life After the European Union. And we called them up and said, come back and help us make sense of the fresh insight on the cautionary tale. So welcome back. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
All right. Tell us who this Boris Johnson guy is, because we've heard his name before. He's integral to this entire conversation about Brexit.
Yeah, Boris Johnson is a bit of a cult of personality. He's been involved. He was a journalist that most of his career he spent as a journalist, got in some trouble for misquoting or attributing quotes to people that were not true, and had lost his position in a couple of different newspapers, and then started running for politics with the Conservative Party. He has been, while he was a journalist, he was a staunch opponent of the European Union and Britain's membership in it, and has continued that in his political career. So so it's his position is not surprising at all, given his history.
Yeah, and he had written a biography on Winston Churchill and says that Winston is his mentor and has been trying to emulate him from the beginning. He was in the running for prime minister when David Cameron stepped down and Theresa May ultimately won that.
Right.
Arguably, people thought he was too extreme at the time. And now Theresa May muddled through 3 years and Boris doesn't seem so bad, I guess, now.
He is no longer too extreme. What's the appeal of this idea of, is this going to happen October 31st, no matter what? Before we talk about the ramifications, why is that an appealing sort of, you know, promise?
Your introduction talked about this going on for 3 years, and they've kicked the can down the road on several occasions, extended timelines and things like that. I think that there is an extreme amount of uncertainty among the British population, and that uncertainty is appearing in all sorts of different things economically, included. There's also this sort of level of sort of popular fatigue. People are just sick of it. And I was listening to a podcast this morning, and someone was recalling Easter, this past Easter, when Brexit got put on sort of pause and everyone took a deep breath and it was like they had something to talk about other than Brexit. Now they're right back into it. So I think there's a sort of popular fatigue as well. And so this desire to get it done and get it done quickly and move on, I think that's part of where the appeal comes from.
I would agree. I really don't have a whole lot to add. Yeah. I think people are tired. They've been dealing with it for 3 to 4 years now, and they voted, and let's move on.
But what, 70% of folks now say they'd vote against it, right? I mean, that's what the polls show. Is that relevant? Is that just a political talking point where somebody who's against it says, look, 70% of us today would vote against it, so slow down?
Well, I think the demographics have changed since the vote as well. I think what you find in the Brexit vote, that there was a large divide between the young and the old, with the older tending to vote to leave the EU and the younger tending to vote to stay in the EU. And I think when we were there in January, somebody estimated that of the people that voted for Brexit, probably about 1 million of them have died since the election. And also an equal number of young people have become eligible to vote. So they do think there is some shift. I do think they are finally seeing that the economy is being hurt over in the UK, and it's being attributed to Brexit.
All right. So what's wrong with a hard break? What's wrong with a no deal Brexit? It's a nice, people can understand it. They voted for it. Get it done. What are the problems, challenges?
Boris Johnson says there aren't any. He says that I read an article today, said going to make Britain great again. And he thinks that this will give them flexibility to do the trade deals, to not be regulated by a distant parliament that they don't have control over. And that, yes, there will be some short-term pain, but I think the year he used was by 2050, we will be on top of the world again.
2050.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Mm-hmm. Why not the no deal, Bill?
I mean, why not?
Who gets hurt? What's?
Oh, I think vast proportions of the population get hurt by a no deal Brexit. I think that the interim in between negotiating, you know, what it's going to take to negotiate new trade deals can't happen until Brexit happens, and the interim in between, I think the country's own budget office is predicting, you know, potential, you know, significant financial and economic damages, including the possibility of a global recession. And I don't think that's out of the question. So I don't think it's just, I think the consequences for Britain are dramatic. I think that the consequences for Ireland and Northern Ireland, we talked about this last time we were on the show, are dramatic, particularly because with a hard Brexit, the backstop goes away. And the backstop was put in place as a protection to not allow a hard border between Ireland and Northern Ireland. That's off the table. And I think that you could see the possible resurgence of violence in Northern Ireland. And I think it's bad for the world. I just think this is, we're on the cusp of another 2008. Mm-hmm. And I think that the economic repercussions globally could be significant.
You said the phrase "make Britain great again," and so then I'm wondering, with the sense of President Trump, and obviously that's a play on his catchphrase, and this idea of we're going to do these trade deals one country to another, that's not working out so well for the American economy right now. What about Boris Johnson would make that still appealing? That it would be, you know, that we have these. You know, we're going to deal with each individual trade person, you know, country to country.
Well, I think the sense is more of control than it is whether it's going to be a better deal. I think what the UK and Britain is looking for is they want to control the trade deal and not have Brussels do it. I think we see similar things here in the Midwest, where sometimes we get frustrated with what's going on in Washington, D.C., and we would rather try to solve the problems ourselves. That's what I think much of this comes from, is that the UK thinks, number one, we can control the trade, we have the people, we have the manpower, we will get a better deal with the United States, they believe, than the EU is currently getting, and they can negotiate with the other countries as well. So I don't know if they're going to get the better trade deals or not. I do know that in negotiation there are various postures that you have to take. And so it could be that they take a hard line in order to gain more. I believe that's probably a position that they're coming from.
Is this idea of an October 31st, you know, take it or leave it, or is that posturing? Is that just a way to go into the negotiations for Prime Minister Johnson with a different gravitas than Theresa May brought?
Well, and he's actually saying, you know, even earlier if possible. And you have to put that in, right, maybe September 31st. Which I think is interesting, because if you look at the parliamentary calendar, Parliament went on recess today. So the summer recess starts. They're not back until early September. And then they have like 2 weeks of conferencing. So if you actually look at the number of parliamentary meeting dates, there are only 9 of them before the end of October. So that means that what he's saying is we can get this done in 9 days, with 9 days of parliamentary debate, which I think is or less.
Unrealistic.
I think it's unrealistic. Yeah. And I think, you know, to Jason's point too, I think the other thing that's important to this is that, you know, with regard to, you know, negotiating trade agreements, Britain really hasn't been involved in negotiating trade agreements for the past 30 years. They don't have the staffing in place, or they haven't had the staffing in place to do that. And so that's all got to get ramped up and put in place by the end of October. Well, that's, you know, so that then that process of negotiating new trade agreements can begin at the end of October. And that's a pretty tall order.
What happens to Theresa May now? Is she done? Is she out of the picture? Was she still a voice in this?
Well, she remains to be a member of Parliament, okay, right. And so yeah, she's still there. I suspect that she will just kind of go to the background, and who knows what her reaction is going to be. I assume there's a sense of relief that she has, that this is no longer the problem that she has to solve. but she still remains to be a player and still remains to have a vote in Parliament. Yeah.
So this idea that it took 3 years and no deal was made, no deal's going to be made in 9 days then. So pretty much he's saying we're going without a deal, realistically.
I think that's a realistic assumption.
Or is there some scenario where all of a sudden everybody goes, oh, we've changed our mind? I don't know. You've looked at this pretty carefully. Is there another scenario where all of a sudden a more favorable deal, is what I'm asking, will appear on the table because it's Prime Minister Boris Johnson?
I think that's highly unlikely.
Okay.
And I think the problem is Boris, if you listen to what he says, if you read the articles on what he's saying, Boris is saying we can get this done, and he provides no specifics.
Right.
And the problem is this is incredibly complex. Even the deal that Theresa May put up to vote three times said, we're going to leave the EU, but we're still going to have a two-year transition period. And part of it is because you still have to have border controls. What are we going to do about border controls? What are we going to do about the 3 million people that are EU citizens that are living in the UK? And likewise, UK citizens that are living in the European Union, what rights do they have? Right now, they're all part of one legal entity. And if the UK backs out, now all of a sudden you're a French citizen living in the UK. What does that even mean? And Boris Johnson said today, don't worry, we'll take care of you. Well, what does that mean? Does your pension carry? Does your health insurance come with it? Will you still be able to work? Theresa May, I think, had a program set up where they, you know, could sign up for and get exempted from all of this. And when we were over there, it was you could do it, but it cost you £65.
You had to have an iPhone.
You had to have an iPhone, and
it wouldn't accept hyphens. So anybody with a hyphenated name had to do the paper, had to actually file then an affidavit on paper,
and then they still might get rejected.
Right,
and so. Dealing with these problems, the UK government, basically in 99 days, if there's going to be a hard Brexit, has to have all of these systems in place. Border control, trade control, free, you know, you've got the free movement of people, of goods, of services, and they don't have anything in place right now to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, the European Union's been rehearsing Brexit scenarios for the past year and a half. So they've been like working with the ports in Calais to try to put in place, you know, what's going to happen with new customs control there. They've been creating all sorts of, you know, working through all sorts of different scenarios to put political, economic systems in place in order to, in anticipation of a hard Brexit. Britain's done very, very little in preparation, and to think that this is all going to, you know, be able to be done in the next, you know, 2 months is again rather unrealistic.
Hmm. What else is sticking with you, and what else can you kind of, you know, turning over in your mind, saying, what about this?
Well, there is a new EU president.
Okay.
Jean-Claude Juncker has been replaced by Ursula von der Leyen, and she has yet to. She's president-elect. And so she's been, at least from what I've read, relatively tight-lipped. She's been very congratulatory to Boris Johnson, but hasn't really said, hey, by the way, you know, we're not, you know, that we're not reopening the deal. Michael Barnier, who was the primary lead, who was the lead negotiator for the European Union, has come out and said, look, you know, you got what you got. And we've already said multiple times, we're not reopening this. This is the best deal the EU will give you. So they're not, there's the potential that something could happen there, but I don't know. But again, I think it's rather unlikely given Barnier's comments.
What do you think is going to happen?
I knew you were going to ask that.
That's an unfair question. So you don't really have to answer it, but
I would put money on a hard Brexit.
Oh, you had to say that. I think
I would.
I mean,
yeah, okay. Not
we're
a lot.
Not calling, how much money? Calling the Super Bowl, but
I'd put more on a hard than I would a soft.
Yeah,
I think it's likely
that that's the direction. That's the inevitability at this point, because not only of the rhetoric, but because no other solution has been put forward.
I think that's the direction that they're heading. I think I think there's some other possibilities, but I don't see them working towards any other direction. The EU has said we're not going to negotiate. Boris Johnson and the hardline Brexiters have said we're not going to change our position, and has consistently said we're going to be out by October 31st. And so if he's not out by if they're not out by October 31st, then I think his whole premiership could, in theory, be in the balance. I mean, it already is, but it really could by then.
I'm going to put my money on, and we'll have this conversation after we're off the air. I'm going to put my money on kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
I think that there's enough momentum behind the idea that the negative consequences of a hard Brexit are just too much to take. And the EU has come forward and said, well, if there's good reason to, we'll extend a deadline. We'll extend the deadline out again. I think it's going to get to a point where they're going to renegotiate, and they're going to come up with some way of getting the EU to extend that deadline.
What do you anticipate the relationship between President Trump and Boris Johnson to be? Is it going to be, is there potential there for those two leaders to make a connection?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, they already have.
They already have. I mean, you know, we just, the ambassador, the UK ambassador to the United States just left office. And there's some evidence, and not to get too conspiratorial, I don't think it's very conspiratorial. There's some evidence to suggest that that was all orchestrated by the Leave politicians in Britain, that this was a headhunt that happened and he got ousted. But I think that in the end, any negotiation between the United States and the UK in terms of trade deals, the United States is going to win.
Well, Trump has already called Boris Johnson the British Trump.
Right.
And so, you know, as long as Boris cooperates with Trump, I think it'll be fine. But I do see them building a relationship. I see some similarities between the two in how they have come to power and how they plan on negotiating. It'll be interesting to watch.
Do you have plans to go back? Does it affect people who are Americans who are traveling? Does that change?
We're going back in January with another group of students. Yeah. So we're committed. I think that I wouldn't advise anybody not to travel to the UK at this point.
Sure. In fact, I would largely encourage it because throughout all of this, the pound versus the dollar the pound this morning was somewhere around $1.24, $1.25. Prior to Brexit, it was in the $1.60 range. Mm-hmm. And so right now, the UK is incredibly affordable. If you can pay the $1,500 to get over there by plane.
Right. Bill Swart and Jason Harris, thank you so much for coming back and letting us ask you all our questions about what's going on next. We appreciate your time.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.